The following audio is from Hope Hill Church. To learn more about Hope Hill Church, please visit hopehillchurch.org.
How many of you here today are currently serving or have served in our nation's military? Would you just stand for a moment so we can recognize you? We thank you for your service to our great nation. And how many of you have lost a loved one, any family member or significant other as a result of war? We want to honor you as well. Thank you so much for serving, and may we continuously thank God for his blessings and favor on our country. I'll be saying more about that in the message. And may we continue to pray for our men and women in uniform, for the families who support them, and for our national leaders who lead them in war and who make the decisions about going to war. What an awesome, awesome responsibility that is. As we think about Memorial Day and our nation at war and all of those issues, I think it's also a good time to reflect upon our role as Christians in the kingdom of God, and our responsibility in the nation. And so to frame those thoughts, we want to spend a little time this morning in the book of 2 Chronicles, specifically chapter 7. We'll look at a few other scriptures, but that's primarily where we'll be going. Many of the verses in this first text you're probably familiar with. I highlighted verse 14 in red. By the way, you may wonder, why are some of the verses in the New Testament in red? We do that just to highlight the words of Jesus, but someone asked on occasion, were they read in the original Greek? The answer would be no. When they were writing on the parchments 2,000 years ago, they didn't write with red ink or anything of that nature. In fact, you probably know that the original scriptures also didn't have chapters and verses. And they didn't capitalize, and they didn't use punctuation. And so the job of Bible translators coming from the original languages have some real challenges when they will read line after line of text without any punctuation marks or periods or chapter headings or any of those sorts of things. And so figuring out when you're translating where one stops and the other one starts can be a real challenge. So this passage is probably familiar to many of you. Let's go through it quickly, and then we'll go back and look at some of the verses. This is actually God speaking primarily to Solomon, but in the hearing of all the people of Israel. And so the background here is that Solomon had built a temple for the worship of God. You may remember that as the children of Israel were going through the desert as they come out of Egypt, they worshiped in a tent. They had a very large, very elaborate tent that was built for worship. And when King David came along, David decided that he wanted to build a real building with solid walls, a temple for the worship of God. And God said to David, you are not the one to build this temple, but your son Solomon, after you're gone, your son Solomon will actually build the temple. And so Solomon built this huge, elaborate temple, and he dedicated it to God. At the dedication ceremony, they had a feast. You know, it's part of Christianity, but it's part of, I guess, who we are as humans. Anytime we celebrate, there has to be food involved. So they slayed thousands of animals, and they had a huge feast, and the entire country was invited to be there. But it was also a time of prayer and of worship. As you know, in those days, there was no separation of church and state. And so the temple was both the place of worship, but it was also the seat of government. It was the capital. And so Solomon poured out his heart to God and asked God to bless the temple. And in response, God spoke to Solomon. And these are part of the words that God spoke to Solomon. God said, "When I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain, or I command the locust to devour the land, or send a plague among my people, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. Now my eyes will be open and my ears attentive to the prayers offered in this place. I have chosen and consecrated this temple so that my name may be there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there." What a tremendous blessing. What a tremendous statement for God to make concerning the temple, and also concerning the government, concerning the nation of Israel. Look at some of these verses, how awesome they really are. Verse 14, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will bring healing to their lands." Verse 15 is just as awesome. When God said concerning the temple, "My eyes will be open, my ears attentive to the prayers offered in this place, for I have chosen and consecrated this temple so that my name will be there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there." Much of what is said to Israel in 2 Chronicles 6 and 7 comes from an earlier set of promises that was given to them back in the book of Deuteronomy as God was bringing them out of Egypt. They went through those 40 years in the desert, and they were headed to the promised land. And in Deuteronomy chapter 28, this is only a part of it, God goes through a long series of blessings and also of warnings, of telling Israel, when you get to this new land, if you will honor me and serve me, basically God said, I will make you the greatest nation on earth. If you obey me, God said, and carefully follow his commands, the Lord will set you high above all nations on earth. All these blessings will come on you and accompany you if you obey the Lord your God. Why would God make Israel the greatest nation on earth? What is the Lord your God will set you high above all the other nations. And if we were to go there, we would find many other statements where God said, I will make you the head and not the tail. You will lend to many nations and borrow from none. God promised to make Israel the greatest nation on the earth if they would obey him. It was God's intent that Israel was not just to be his chosen and blessed people just for their own benefit so they could be blessed. It was God's intent that Israel would be the people of God. They would be God's representatives on the earth. They would be his evangelists, his missionaries. And so that all the other nations of the earth could look at Israel and see an example of what it means to be the people of God. And the other nations could learn about God by looking at Israel and how God was blessing them. Much the same as you and I as Christians. It is God's intent that we live our lives as Christians and that people around us should be able to see us and see what it means to be the people of God. So how do you feel about that? If people around you are watching your life, do they have a good idea of what it means to be the people of God? Well, Israel was about as good at it as you are. There were times when they were very good. There were times when the nations around them looked at Israel and said, wow, their God is awesome. Rahab, we were talking about this in one of our community group meetings. Rahab, when the Israelites approached her city, she said, "We heard about your God. We know how God brought you out of Egypt. We know how God has taken you through the desert all of these years. We've heard about your God, and we are fearful because of what God is doing in your life." So that was God's intent for Israel, is that they should live as the people of God. The other nations around them would see it, and they would come to understand what it means to be the people of God. But God also gave them warnings. He said, "I intend to bless you. I intend to make you the greatest nation on earth. But if you fail to follow me, if you don't follow me," then he gave them strict warnings as to what could happen if they failed to follow God. The warnings: "But if you turn away and forsake the decrees and commands I've given you, and you go off to serve other gods," God said, "then I will uproot Israel from my land." Now, we often think that Israel is God's favorite nation and they can never do any wrong. And we often think that about the United States also. America is God's favorite country. He blesses us. We can do no wrong. And no matter what we do, God's always going to bless us. But look at what he said to Israel. "If you turn away and forsake others," God said, "I will uproot Israel from my land, which I've given them. I will reject this temple that you have just built." This temple that God said, "My name will always be there. My eyes will be open. My ears will be attentive to your prayers." Now he's saying, "But if you turn away from me, I will reject this temple that I've consecrated. I will make it a byword and an object of ridicule among all nations." What an awesome warning. But if God would say that to Israel, what would he say to America? There is no doubt that we are favored of God. There is no doubt that we enjoy God's blessing. There's no doubt that God's hand was involved in forming us as a nation, and his hands remain on us. But he told Israel, "If you don't continue to follow me, I will reject you, I will uproot you, I will destroy this temple that you have just dedicated to me." If God says that he will hold Israel accountable, I have to think that he would hold us accountable as well. This verse is probably one of the most quoted verses in the Bible. We love to quote it. I do. "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn away from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will heal their land." In those days, he was definitely talking about Israel when he said, "If my people who are called by my name." But how would we apply this today? The people of God are not the people of the Congress or the people of the White House. Now, obviously, there are some Christians in government. There are Christians in the White House. There are Christians in the Congress. But they are not the spiritual leaders of our nation. And spiritual leadership will never come from them. And so if we're to look at what does God mean when he says, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray," Jesus said it best when he said, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." He wasn't talking about government leaders necessarily. In Israel's day, there was no difference. There was no separation. And so the king was also the spiritual leader, and they had the prophets and the priests. They were both the spiritual leaders in the government. In our day, when God says, if my people who are called by my name, he's talking about you. He's talking about you and I as the church. We are the people of God. We are the salt of the earth. We are the light of the world. Not Congress, not the White House. We can't look for spiritual leadership from those places, although there are Christians there. But God has given us, the church, the calling to be the people of God. And along with that, he's given us the awesome responsibility to act and to live and to speak the Word of God into the world. Memorial Day, a time of commemorating and of honoring those who have given their lives. The first Memorial Day was announced following the close of the Civil War, which was America's costliest war in terms of deaths, 625,000 deaths. And these are only the deaths. It doesn't take into account those who were seriously injured, those who will spend the rest of their lives in pain and in suffering. If you really want to get a better feel for that and you want something to soak in beyond the numbers and to touch your heart, you should go up to Walter Reed sometime and wander around the halls up there and look at the young people, many in their early 20s, coming back from the Middle East with limbs missing, with part of their face and skulls missing. I was in a dinner meeting last month with a guy who had pretty much the whole front of his, I'll try not to get too graphic on you, but had lost pretty much the whole front of his face as a result of an explosion in Iraq. So much so that the commander of his unit, they were still under fire and they were trying to get out. The commander of his unit pronounced that he was dead. Take his body, but he's dead. And a Navy corpsman said, I think he's still alive and I think I can do something with him, even though his whole front face was gone. He did an emergency tracheotomy with his field knife right there on the street, and put in a breathing tube so he could breathe. And 4 years later, I'm having dinner with him last month. An amazing story. So when I go to Walter Reed and I see young men and young women with arms and legs and other body parts missing, it really tells the story of the awesomeness of war, more than just seeing numbers on a chart. But as I see that, and as I read about war in both the Old and the New Testament, oftentimes in the Old Testament, when they had godly kings, some of them were godly, some of them weren't, many times before they went to war, the king would call for the prophet. He'd say, bring in the prophets. Prophet, tell us, thus saith the Lord, should we go to war or should we not? Will you give us the victory, God? Is your blessing on this? They didn't always listen to the prophets, but sometimes they did. But we don't have that much anymore. Presidents and national security councils, some of them pray. They don't often know, send for the prophet. Tell us, thus saith the Lord, should we be going to war or not? Sometimes I wonder if these numbers would be significantly different if the church, if the people of God would rise up and provide the spiritual leadership that God has called us to. Unfortunately, we have pretty much lost our prophetic voice. That prophetic voice that speaks the thus saith the Lord concerning the issues of our day and of our lives. It's not just about war. It's about a whole host of issues in which we as the people of God have both the responsibility and the ability to be God's people on mission in the world. Regardless whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you name the name of Christ, if you call yourself a Christian, you are part of God's people, you are God's representative on the earth. And collectively, we are the people of God. Collectively, we are the salt of the earth, we are the light of the world. And it's up to us to be God's people on mission, to speak His word of truth into the issues of our day. Jesus said to His disciples, He didn't say, you are the salt of the church or the light of the church. You know, it's easy for us to gather here on Sunday morning at Hope Hill and to be the light when we're surrounded by fellow believers. Because we can talk religious talk. We can talk about Jesus and we know that everybody understands. The person next to you, in front of you, in back of it, will understand when you're talking about your love for God. And so we can come here and we're safe letting our light shine here in the church. But Jesus didn't say, be the light of the church. He said, you're the light of the world. He didn't say, be salt inside the church. He said, you're the salt of the earth. The implication that being there that we shouldn't just be Christians here, but we should take our light outside of the building into dark places. That's where light is needed, not among other lights, but in dark places. We're called to be the people of God out on the street corners, in the workplaces, in the jails, in the homeless shelters. We are called to be the people of God on mission in the world. Jesus said, I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. That's what being salt and light is really all about. Not what we do on Sunday morning. That's an important part of it. But we really come here to get our batteries charged and our lights polished a little bit and our salt to get itself together. But we come here to do those things, but to be effective as the light of the world and as the salt of the earth, we need to go forth out of here to really be the people of God on mission. So what can we do? Let me leave you with three things. We need to pray for our national leaders. Too many of us pray for our own political parties, and our only prayer is, may our political party win and the other people get thrown out. No, we're called to pray for all of those in places of leadership and authority. Those numbers that we looked at concerning war deaths might be different if we spent more time praying for national leaders regardless of their political affiliation and for decision makers and for military commanders, if we really put our politics aside and prayed for our nation without political nuances. Secondly, strengthen our church. We can be the people of God individually. We can be salt and we can be light. But to be most effective, it is who we are as a church. It is who we are when we not just gather here, but when we pull together and when we combine our lights together and we combine our resources together and our planning and our strategies and our studies. We're the people of God most effectively when we work together in unity as the salt and as the light. We need to strengthen the church to be a part of the church and to work together as the church. Thirdly, we need to train our young people to be spiritual leaders. We need to train them what it means to be the people of God on mission in the world. Whether God has called you to be a doctor or a lawyer or a technician or a computer geek or whatever God has called you to be, or a rock star, whatever God has called you to be it as a person of God on mission, set out to make a difference in the world. I would invite you to take a few moments and consider your role in it. What is God calling you to be? Do you hear from God? Are you in relationship with God? In a few moments, we're going to invite you to come and pray. If you have a specific prayer need that you would like to pray with me about or to a member of the prayer team, if you want to commit your life to Christ, there may be some who are just sort of hanging on at the edge, just sort of gathering around the edge of it all, but not really totally dedicated to God. He's not number one in your life. We would invite you on this Sunday to make this a very special Sunday in which you decide that Christ is going to be number one in your life and that your commitment to Him would be complete. If you would like to do that today, come. We would like to pray with you. If you have any other need of any kind whatsoever, please come. We would love to pray with you. We'll have some other members of the prayer team come up, and whatever your needs are, we would love to pray with you. We invite you also to worship in communion with us this morning.